and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, U.S. Arctic Research Commission Chair Fran Ulmer, Community Environment and Safety Manager for the Aleutian-Pribilof Islands Association Karen Pletnikoff, and State of Alaska Arctic Advisor to the Governor Craig Fleener discussed the Arctic Council in a panel entitled Arctic Council 101, What's the Big Deal Anyway? This talk was recorded at the Dena'ina Center on February 11th as part of the week-long Alaska Forum on the Environment and has been shortened for broadcast. Director of U.S. Arctic Programs for the World Wildlife Fund, Margaret Williams, moderated the discussion.
So I'm Margaret Williams. I'm Director of World Wildlife Fund's Arctic Program, and World Wildlife Fund has an office here in Anchorage. We work around the Alaskan Arctic, and we also have offices in many Arctic countries and have been involved in the Arctic Council as long as it's been created. So it's an area of special interest, and this is an exciting time for the Arctic. So I'm really pleased to have this panel here. And I'd like to just first introduce the speakers, and then we will start off with Fran Ulmer. And as many of you know, Fran has many talents and a deep history and experience in Alaska and the Arctic as former mayor of Juneau and former lieutenant governor and former director of ICER, and was recently, 3 years ago, appointed by President Obama to be the chairman of the U.S. Arctic Research Commission. And then last year, thank goodness, her wonderful skills and talents were recognized, and she was appointed to be the special science advisor to Secretary Kerry as we go into the U.S. chairmanship of the Arctic Council. So we are also lucky to have Karen Pletnikoff, who I've had the fortune to work with on a number of issues around the Pribilof Islands and the Central Bering Sea, and many people might not realize, but the U.S. considers the Bering Sea, all of the Bering Sea, down to the Aleutian Islands, officially part of the Arctic, even though it is below the Arctic Circle. So Karen is the Environmental and Safety Program Officer for the Aleutian-Pribilof Islands Association. She's been there for quite a few years, but before that was with the Bristol Bay Native Association. You may have heard her on the radio recently when she was testifying before the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council on the issue of halibut bycatch in the pollock fishery. And so we're looking forward to hearing from her as a representative of one of the organizations which is a permanent participant in the Arctic Council. And we'll hear about what permanent participants are, what it means, from Fran and Karen as well. And finally, we have Craig Fleener. And Craig also brings a wonderful perspective. And again, we're very lucky to have him not only in this panel, but he has been appointed by the governor as a special Arctic advisor. For the state of Alaska. And Craig has a long career in public service. He was representative of the Council of Athabascan Tribal Governments and himself is from Fort Yukon. He is from Fort Yukon. He was a major in the U.S. Air Force Alaska Air National Guard and served a tour in Afghanistan. He was also the former deputy commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game and stepped away from a political campaign to take on this important role. So we're all very grateful to you for your public service and looking forward to your leadership on Arctic issues in Alaska, Craig. So with that, I will hand it over to Fran. And this may be one of the few presentations you attend without PowerPoint. So we're just going to hear from our speakers and then go into a discussion. Thanks, Fran.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. It feels very strange to be doing a speech without a PowerPoint, but Margaret asked if we would just keep it short and keep it focused, and I'll do my best to do that. First of all, let me say at the back of the room, there are a couple of things that I brought with me that you may want to take with you. If you want to know more about the U.S. Arctic Research Commission, which I chair, you want to pick up one of these, which describes sort of our broad goals and tells you a little bit about the people who serve on it, what we do. And it takes you to our website, which is arctic.gov, which is an excellent source of information for you, not only about research, but also would enable you to sign up for the Daily Update, which is an electronic newsletter that tells you about everything that's going on in the Arctic. And if you're interested in the Arctic, and you haven't yet signed up for the daily update, you are missing an opportunity to sort of stay plugged in to everything that's going on at the state, federal, international, science, policy, governance level. So go to arctic.gov and sign up. So very, very, very briefly, what is the Arctic Council? Now, most of you probably know this, so my apologies to those of you who do. But the Arctic Council came about in 1996 as really an effort among the eight Arctic nations to work together in a collaborative, cooperative, let's all listen to each other, learn from each other, do research together, write reports together, and make sure that in the Arctic, this very special place, this valuable and vulnerable place, has the eight Arctic nations plus the permanent participants and observers working together to try to really inform each other, but also inform the world about what's going on in the Arctic. It was not created by a treaty. It does not have power like some treaty organizations, and it doesn't have money. So for all of you who thought it had money, you can leave the room now. It is not about money. It does not build things. It doesn't do grants. It isn't like that. It is actually an opportunity for people to think about, talk about, work on, and provide information that might help decision makers, whether they're in the public sector or the private sector, make a difference. It had two sort of principal areas of focus: protecting the environment of the Arctic and sustainable development in the Arctic. And those have remained the same really ever since the beginning in 1996. Now, the Council is a complicated organization with working groups that actually kind of do the work of the Council between Council meetings. So those working groups is sort of where the action's at. And those working groups, again, there are too many to talk about in the short period of time that I have, but many people, scientists, business leaders, community leaders, as well as representatives from the government agencies, the permanent participants, can work in those working groups to achieve this sense of, gee, we need to know more, we need to work together, and we need to make sure that the Arctic is a place that is respected, both in terms of environmental protection, but also in terms of the indigenous people of the North. So that's sort of the focus area. So every 2 years, the chairmanship of the Arctic Council shifts from one country to the next among the eight Arctic nations. And the reason there's a lot more attention right now in the United States about the whole process of the Arctic Council is because the U.S. becomes the chair of the Arctic Council in April. It has chaired it once before, back in the 1990s. Actually, I was lieutenant governor at the time, and I was sort of the state representative who worried about the Arctic Council, so in a way, this is very deja vu for me. But let me just say that between then and now, there's been a huge change in terms of the amount of attention and the amount of work generated, both at the working group level, the council level, but also agreements that the council has suggested to the member nations. And I'll give you the two big examples in recent years. An agreement among the eight Arctic states as it relates to oil spill and search and rescue. So the search and rescue agreement came first, and then the oil spill response agreement came second. And there's a third agreement that they're working on right now that deals with international science cooperation, which actually there's a meeting in about 2 weeks in Oslo that is going to get to the sort of the final version. So that's a big change since the last time the U.S. chaired the Arctic Council. So it's becoming much more of a focusing and attention getting because the whole world is paying more attention to the Arctic. So what about the U.S. chairmanship? What is going to happen and how will it impact Alaskans? So the U.S. has chosen as its broad theme for its chairmanship, One Arctic, Shared Opportunities, Challenges, and Responsibilities. And under all three of those, there is a lot that we could talk about. But the leadership of the United States, which is primarily the State Department, which takes the lead on Arctic Council things with the cooperation of many others, has chosen sort of three work areas under that broad theme. And one is the safety, security, and stewardship of the Arctic Ocean. Another is addressing the impacts of climate change. And the third is improving the economic and living conditions of the people of the Arctic. Now, under all three of those, there are a whole bunch of proposed projects. And those projects are being negotiated right now with the other nations that sit at the Arctic Council table, because the entire Arctic Council process is by consensus. It's not like the U.S. can decide, oh, I'm going to go do this for my chairmanship and that's it. The U.S. has to negotiate the entire thing with the other nations. So that's being negotiated right now, these specific projects, but those specific projects are likely to involve things like, for example, under the improving the economic and living conditions of the people of the Arctic, projects that deal with water, with renewable energy, with suicide, with the issues that are very important to Alaskans, the same sort of thing that we'd be talking about in all of these meeting rooms about the challenges that we are facing in the Arctic. So again, I've pretty much run out of time already, but let me just say, these three areas, the Arctic Ocean, climate change, and the living conditions in the Arctic, are the three big areas. Under those specific projects, and in those specific projects, which will be worked on by the working groups that I mentioned before, there is opportunity for involvement and engagement and support. And let me again say that the Arctic Council isn't about giving money. So it's not one of those things where, oh, I've got an idea, can I go to the Arctic Council and get it funded? It's more along the lines of, I have expertise, I have knowledge, I have traditional knowledge, I already am working on this as it relates to renewable energy, and this is how I might be able to help. So that's kind of the broad brush of where we are headed. Now, just a moment about sort of the structure and kind of the logistics associated with this. So, as the U.S. chairs the Arctic Council, there is one big meeting as we come in as chair, and John Kerry, who is Secretary of State, will be the minister at the table at that meeting. And then there's another meeting 2 years later at the end of the chairmanship. And in between those times, there are meetings by what are called the senior Arctic officials. Those tend to be people who, like, work at the State Department in all of those countries. And those senior Arctic officials really are kind of the people that keep the engine running, so to speak, for the Arctic Council. They meet much more frequently, and they kind of guide the work of the working groups, and they give feedback back to their ministers so that there's communication kind of up and down the food chain, so to speak. So those senior Arctic officials, the one for the United States is a woman named Julie Gourley. She has been the senior Arctic official for as long as I can remember, actually. And she, at the State Department, is focused very much on the U.S. agenda, but she's also very focused on keeping communication lines open with everybody else that is involved in this. In addition, when the senior Arctic officials meet, there needs to be a chair of the senior Arctic officials. And that chairperson also comes from the country that is chairing the whole Arctic Council. So there is a chair of the senior Arctic officials so that when they meet, there's someone who's sort of running the meetings. And I don't think it's been officially announced, but it's highly likely, and you can, you know, take this off the record, that it's David Bolton, who It would be surprising to me if it wasn't David Bolton, because he has been the ambassador for oceans. He has been engaged in the Arctic Council and on Arctic issues for a very long time. And he actually lived in Alaska for a short period of time, a long time ago. He works oceans. He works fisheries issues. He's very knowledgeable about the things that I would say really, really matter to the people of the Arctic and the people of Alaska. So that's sort of the structure. Now, the U.S. also, last summer, appointed a special representative to the Arctic. His name is Bob Papp. He is formerly the commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard. He is an admiral, and so people usually call him Admiral Papp, but he is the special representative. What does that mean? It's a lot like being an ambassador, but without that title. But it's sort of the person at the high diplomatic level for the United States that interacts with the other Arctic nations, not just on the Arctic Council. It's a much broader portfolio. You think ambassador sort of broadly to the Arctic region. That's what Bob Papp's role is. He lives in Washington, D.C. Again, he was appointed last summer. He will be involved with Arctic Council things, but the people who really will, on a day-in and day-out basis, be doing the work, the senior Arctic official, Julie Gourley, the working groups, and the people, many people, who contribute to the effort of the Arctic Council. Now I know I really have got run out of time, but there's one last thing I'm going to say before I sit down. There's so much going on in the Arctic right now that it's sometimes very confusing to people about how all this, the Arctic Council stuff and the State Department stuff and this international stuff, relates to what's going on at the national or federal government level or at the state government level. And I will defer to Craig to talk about the state level, but let me just mention in terms of the federal level what I would like you to think about. There is this basket that I've just described of the Arctic Council and all of its issues, complexities, projects, working groups, et cetera. That's one big basket. Now over here is another big basket. And in that big basket is the U.S. federal government and its initiatives with regard to the Arctic domestically. In 2013, President Obama adopted the National Arctic Strategy, which kind of lays out the federal agenda for federal agencies and how those agencies should proceed as it relates to the Arctic. In 2014, the administration came out with an implementation plan for that National Arctic Strategy. And then in January of 2015, the president issued an executive order that basically shows the federal agencies in the world how that strategy and that implementation plan will actually be organized and managed with a steering committee and with much more focus. So that's a whole nother hour lecture, which you're not going to get from me this morning. But again, you could go to Google and you could find the National Arctic Strategy, you could find the implementation plan, and you could find the EO, the executive order. And that would tell you more about what the federal agencies and this administration are focused on for purposes of addressing the issues in the Arctic. There is some overlap between these baskets, but not really so much. And so when people start thinking about, you know, what a particular federal agency is doing in the Arctic, don't get that too confused with the Arctic Council process, which is at this international level, with, yes, some domestic projects, but not the federal agency's mandates. Now, I hope I haven't confused you too much before I sit down. But again, I just want to remind you, if you want to know more about the Arctic Research Commission, or if you want to sign up for the daily update, go to arctic.gov. If you want to know more about the Arctic Council, the process, the working groups, the projects, which will be released probably more formally in about a month, either pick up one of these PowerPoints at the back of the room, or you can also Google Arctic Council, because there's a website for that. And if you want to know more about the federal agencies' initiatives in the Arctic, the National Arctic Strategy, the Implementation Plan, or the EO, you could either go to the White House page or just Google that. Thank you very much.
Let me welcome Karen Pletnikoff, a representative on behalf of the Aleut International Association, which is a permanent participant in the Arctic Council. Thanks, Margaret. Karen.
Good morning, everyone. As Margaret said, I'm Karen Pletnikoff. I'm the Community Environment and Safety Manager for the Aleutian Preblof Islands Association, but I'm also the Emergency Preparedness, Prevention, and Response representative for the Aleut International Association. And on behalf of the Executive Director, Jim Gamble, and our Board of Directors, I'd like to thank you for your interest this morning and point out that our AIA President, Arlene Gunderson, is in the room. AIA was formed in 1998 through the efforts of the Aleutian Preblof Islands Association, and forgive me, I'll have to read this, the indigenous peoples of the north of the Aleut district of the Kamchatka region of the Russian Federation, known as the simple acronym AIPNADRK. AIA is governed by a board of directors that consists of Aleuts from Alaska and Russia, four each. And we have two main purposes, and that's to establish, reestablish, and maintain our connections with the Aleuts of the Komondorsky Islands and Kamchatka Peninsula and Alaska, and to bridge the international activities through the Arctic Council that impact our indigenous peoples. AIA works very closely with governments, scientists, and other organizations, and we really need to continue to increase our involvement of the folks in our region, which we have in recent years. I'm very proud of the direction Jim has taken the organization. Some of our past work includes response and intervention systems of climate change induced by paralytic shellfish poisoning. So it's a PSP project, which complements the work that APIA has done as the regional native nonprofit consortium of the 13 Aleut tribes on PSP impacts in our region and throughout the state. Testing for the presence of contaminants in women on the Komondorsky Islands. Aleut and Ununga ethnobiography, an annotated bibliography, and the improvement of indigenous peoples' participation in government actions, including with working in conjunction with NGOs, non-governmental organizations. One of our biggest projects right now is the CONUS project, Community Observation Network for Adaptation and Security, which is really focused on looking for indicators of the ability to adapt to climate change and other pressures in our small communities. These surveys are being led by community members, and the data, how the data is used and where we go from there will be really influenced by our communities. So this is a more appropriate and progressive way of interacting with our communities than many projects have had in the past. Some of the other efforts AIA is currently working on include, as mentioned, mental health and suicide prevention, which is one of the highlights of the themes of the United States chairmanship. And again, another positive movement is the Sustainable Development Working Group's latest focus on how to incorporate traditional knowledge appropriately throughout all of the working group's efforts. Some working groups have been hesitant to properly incorporate traditional knowledge, often citing complications like we don't know what it is or we don't know what to do with it, but actually these are no longer valid reasons for failing to incorporate traditional knowledge as appropriate and as the communities see fit in their different activities. Another initiative is the Black Carbon Initiative, which is going to be looking at doing small community projects in Russia and Alaska, and that's still moving forward. And again, reflected in the thematic priorities of the United States chairmanship, which is very exciting. We're also working on developing a small community project for the Emergency Preparedness Prevention and Response Working Group to see about local capacities in Alaska and across the Arctic on how to prevent and respond to spills, especially oil spills. Language has also been one of AIA's priorities with the Arctic Council, working again with the Sustainable Development Working Group. As far as larger priorities for AIA, communications is always a big one. Communications between AIA and the different working groups, the U.S. senior Arctic officials, and now the U.S. chairman. And then more importantly, back into our region, but also the rest of Alaska. So I'd like to let you know that not that we can accommodate every request or anything, but we're definitely interested in knowing your priorities and hearing from you. And that will assist us in knowing who's interested in participating in Arctic Council efforts, as well as who has the capacity to do so. Because again, as Fran pointed out, this is one of those magical things that happens on a very, very small budget, but really does synthesize data, explore branches that are being left out of some of our agency's priorities, and gets that much bigger picture, that Pan-Arctic picture. We're also very excited to see that there's a more focused effort to coordinate between the Indigenous People's Secretariat and the Arctic Council Secretariat. So there's just been a lot of positive move in the Arctic Council in between the indigenous peoples and the senior Arctic officials lately. AIA will be transferring our chairmanship from ours over the last 2 years to Gwich'in Council International. So that's very exciting. The different permanent participants participate at different levels and have different focuses. So just like the Arctic Council is consensus-based, so are the indigenous peoples, and they're also, they all bring their own challenges and interests to the table, really providing just such a broad array of things that we can work towards and look into. One of the goals of the CONUS project is to improve marine subsistence use mapping in our communities so that folks can appropriately determine where their important subsistence use areas are, but also protect that information, consolidate it, and use it as they see fit for proprietary information. I mentioned the Black Carbon Project. One of AIA's main goals is that cultural exchange, and it is such an amazing thing to see the peoples of the Komondorski and the peoples of Atka speak in Unangam Tanu, the Aleut language, while neither of them know either English or Russian, but just strictly Aleut communication. It's just such an amazing thing to see, as well as the passion that the surviving Aleuts of the Komondorskis have brought to our culture camps and to AIA overall. One of the challenges I would like to note about that is that for our Aleut Russian participants and board members, we've been challenged with just the simple logistics of folks who are living on a controlled island in a controlled district, and then just the basic visa issues of trying to get out of Far Eastern Russia and to the United States or any of our international meeting areas. So it's something we're continually improving on. I think Fran covered the Arctic Council wonderfully. I'd like to point out that, again, we've made incredible strides in the last couple of years of improving the relationships and the participation in between the indigenous peoples and the Arctic Council working groups as a whole, including this acknowledgement of traditional knowledge as an essential part of their activities. Search and rescue, that's something that we as rural Alaskans can all see the benefits of and need for. And it was touched on, the Oil Pollution Preparedness and Response Agreement is one just step in the right direction. AIA is very excited to see the U.S. priorities, especially for Alaska and rural Alaska. I want to point out that a number of them do impact us directly. Black carbon is one. This is one that is one of those things that doesn't sound very exciting, but really is. Pan-Arctic digital elevation mapping. And in many places in rural and Western Alaska, especially Western Alaska, but it's a problem everywhere, is we have such a lack of information on a basic map on how high things are, how low things are. We only have 8 tidal datums across the coast of Western Alaska, and there are more tidal datums in Washington, D.C. proper than there are across the coast of Alaska. So when we're the ones who are impacted by coastal erosion, climate change, winter storms, and we don't even know what our baseline tide is to make those future decisions on where to put the infrastructure, how high it's going to need to be, all those things, those are very much going to be helped to be informed by this Pan-Arctic digital elevation mapping effort. And there were a couple more I wanted to point out. Search and rescue, of course. Renewable energy demonstrations. We all know that the high cost of energy in rural Alaska is a burden on our ability to prosper, ability to keep our lights on as communities, and to keep a standard of living that's appropriate as American citizens. On that line, community sanitation and public health, especially looking for new ways to address communities that are being challenged by losing their water resources is especially important. Arctic Ocean acidification. This is something that actually, when we look at where are things acidifying the most quickly, we see very alarming numbers in the Bering Sea, as well as in the Chukchi, right as it shoots out of the Bering Strait. And these are the ice edge in the Bering, as well as the ice edge in the Chukchi, are two incredibly important places for primary production. So that's the little tiny things that build those calcium shells that feed the entire food chain. So getting a handle on ocean acidification, although it's a very large issue, is critical to our safety, survival, and success ecosystem-wide. And finally, this is hopefully very exciting. We are often challenged in rural Alaska to see where we go economically from here, and one of the themes that the U.S. chairmanship will bring to the Arctic Council is telecommunications infrastructure and the opportunity for us to develop new economies, new ways of doing things, or to just improve our kids' Facebook speed is really something that we can all be grateful for. Well, I'd like to point out that, and as Fran mentioned, the Arctic research in general is a very complicated thing. There are so many different players. There are so many different sectors, from atmospheric science to ocean science to biology, and then, of course, us as people. So this incredibly disparate group of researchers, and finally acknowledging more the social science end of it as well, has come under, we're moving in the right direction, and that's really exciting. However, you know, the U.S. has about 1.5 icebreakers at this point, so perhaps this renewed focus on the Arctic with the U.S. chairmanship will be beneficial for us all. Thank you.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with the U.S. Arctic Research Commission Chair, Fran Ulmer, Community Environment and Safety Manager for the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association, Karen Pletnikoff, and State of Alaska Arctic Advisor to the Governor, Craig Fleener. Their discussion on the Intergovernmental Arctic Council and the United States' upcoming chairmanship of the Council was recorded at the Dena'ina Center on February 11th as part of the week-long Alaska Forum on the Environment and has been shortened for broadcast. Director of U.S. Arctic Programs for the Rural Wildlife Fund, Margaret Williams, moderated the discussion and introduced the third speaker, Craig Fleener.
I really appreciate the emphasis on collaboration with Russia, because right now, as you all know, we have a very tense relationship at our governmental level between the U.S. and Russia, and I'm very much hoping that the Arctic Council and projects like the one that Karen mentioned, World Wildlife Fund is doing some projects, other groups are working with Russia. This is going to be so critical to keep supporting that type of work to make sure we maintain good relationships and communication across the U.S.-Russia border. So now we've heard about the big global picture and the national picture and Alaska and global picture, and now we're going to hear from Craig Fleener, Special Representative on the Arctic to Governor Walker.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, and as you can hear, my voice is kind of weak, so let me know if you're having trouble hearing me in the back, and I'll see if I can holler a little louder. So we've heard from Fran basically a little bit about the functioning of the Arctic Council, what it is, who goes there, what its purpose is, and you've heard a very nice story from Karen on what one of the permanent participant groups can do. And so really my focus is going to be to talk a little bit about how Alaskans in general, now we've already been talking about Alaskans, because if it wasn't for Alaska, the United States wouldn't be an Arctic nation, right? So hear, hear for Alaska. But we have two wonderful Alaskans sitting before us that represent this state very well. Their organizations, the work that they do, represent this state very well. And we have a tremendous number of Alaskans that participate. So I guess kind of the first thing that I want to tell you is, don't think of this activity as something that's taken place over the next 2 years. How many of you are from Alaska? There's a couple of you out there. This is your home. This is my home. I'm an Arctic citizen. I'm born and raised in Fort Yukon, and I'm living down here in Anchorage right now, but this is my home, it's your home. We cannot treat this as a two-year slice of time where we need to all rush in and get busy and get excited. This is something that needs to be carried on long into the future, because this is going to continue to be your home when Finland takes the chairmanship or when Russia gets the chairmanship. And so don't think of this as short term, think of it as long term, and think of every single possible way you could get involved to make Alaska better, to make it more sustainable, to make it viable, to make it stronger, because that's Arctic policy. And maybe all of Alaska isn't necessarily considered the Arctic if you take a look at the maps that have it defined along the Yukon, Kuskokwim, and down to the Aleutians, but that doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is that we all think of our input to Alaska as having some impact. Whether you live here in Anchorage, which is sort of the gateway for all of the activities that take place in the Arctic. Now, I don't want to steal the thunder away from Fairbanks, because they see themselves as the gateway and they do a lot of great things as well. But the fact of the matter is that the majority of the population centers really do have an awful lot of impact on the Arctic, and the Arctic has an awful lot of impact on them. And so we're all Arctic citizens, and I want you to think that way. When somebody says to you, when somebody talks about the Arctic to you, you need to remind them that the Arctic is Alaska. So say Alaska when you're talking about the Arctic. Don't just say the Arctic. Now, it is important to have this international perspective. And Fran is right. There are very big differences in the international world and the domestic world. And she has to remind me of that all the time, because I want to stick my hands into everything Arctic. But it is very true that Alaska has a specific role. And we have a specific and a unique relationship with our own federal government. So we need to remember that. But we do need to remember that all of the decisions that the United States or Alaska makes in terms of the Arctic will affect you, it'll affect me. Almost every decision, unless it's something hundreds of miles out that we may never see or hear from. But I would just say 100% of the time, the decisions that are being made in DC on the Arctic, they relate to Alaska, therefore they're going to impact your life in one way or the other, and you need to be involved. You can't just rely on state government, although we're going to do the best job we can. It's got to be you, because there's a lot more of you out there than there is of me. And right now I'm the only Arctic guy working for the state of Alaska, although we do have a number of other folks that have Arctic expertise. So just remember that. Alaskans are already contributing in a tremendous way to the Arctic on Arctic issues. One is when Governor Walker, right before he became governor and did the swearing in, we had our transition teams. And one of the transition teams focused specifically on the Arctic. And there were quite a few Alaskans from all walks of life, from all fields, that came together to say to the governor, this is what we think you should do on the Arctic, and we're incorporating those ideas as we speak. There's the current work that's taking place by universities, by permanent participant organizations, by Alaska Native corporations, by those who are developing our resources. So there's an awful lot of things going on in the Arctic right now. And of course, our wonderful university system that's very well known for Arctic research. But there's much more to do. We all need to get involved, as I've said. What we need to do is educate the state. We need to educate the nation, and we need to educate the world that Alaska is our Arctic, and we have different priorities than our federal government. And it's okay to have those different priorities. As we said, there are different purposes that we serve. And we're going to try to mesh those the best we can, because we want the synergies to get the word out about who we are and what we're doing, and we want to be able to work together, and we want to be able to maximize dollars and maximize research and not duplicate effort. But we do have differences, and we need to remember that we have those differences, and we don't need to think of those differences necessarily as bad. We just need to work through our differences. Each and every one of you need to continue giving input on what the Arctic Council should be working on, what the U.S. should be looking at, and what the state of Alaska should be working on when it comes to Arctic research, and participate as often as possible. You've heard about some of the U.S. priorities. You've heard about the concept of One Arctic. And it is an important concept. As long as we're making sure that Alaskans' perspectives are being considered, it's a perfectly fine perspective. Now, there's something interesting that I heard a few minutes ago, and it was protection and development, basically used in the same sentence. And a lot of people wonder, well, what the heck? How can you do that? Well, I don't think that they're mutually exclusive. I think you need to do those. I think you need to protect our environment, and you need to develop our resources at the same time. Of course, that's a theme for Alaska. It has been forever. We're a resource development state. We must develop our resources in order to generate the revenue that makes everything possible. It doesn't mean we can't look to innovation. We need to be more innovative. It doesn't mean we can't look to reducing energy costs. We have to do that. We have to do all of this together. We have to protect. I prefer the word conserve because protect means bad things to some people. Either way, it doesn't matter. We need to work together to ensure that our renewable resources are there long into the future. They're in good shape and they're going to take care of all of us while we're developing our non-renewable resources to actually generate the revenue that that has made Alaska a powerhouse. Alaska has a number of priorities, and they don't perfectly line up with the national priorities, but a lot of them are really close. One of our top priorities is community sustainability. We have a focus on food security. We have to make sure that people can, that people have a secure food source. And I, when I'm talking about that, I mean urban and rural. If Anchorage is cut off right now from the rest of the world, our food supply is going to, it's not going to last very long. I'm happy. I have a freezer full of caribou and salmon. Some people don't. But we also need to make sure that our food is secure out in rural Alaska, which means we need to manage our fish and game resources wisely. We need to manage them so people can have continued, easier, better access to those wonderful resources that they've been harvesting their entire lives. As part of community sustainability, we need to focus on job creation, healthy living, and the reducing the cost of energy. This is one of the governor's priorities. Many of you have heard it. If we don't reduce the cost of energy, almost everything else is for naught because we cannot afford to keep going the way that we're going. I mean, we're all a little bit happy. It's kind of a mixed bag, right? The drop in oil prices. I like on my way to work seeing that it was only $2.39. That was last winter. Seeing the $2 plus drop in the price of oil. But we need to find ways that we can keep energy costs lower. And this is not my area of expertise, so I'm not going to speak about it. But this is an area of expertise for a lot of you. And this is going to be a continued area of focus for the state of Alaska. And we need all the help we can get in trying to reduce those energy costs. We must focus on economic development. We have to diversify our economy. We have to continue developing the resources that have made Alaska strong. And we need to work on value-added economies. We cannot continue to send our resources out of state without having processed them at all. The idea of selling a tree in the whole and sending it off, to me, is ridiculous. The idea of selling a fish in the whole by itself is ridiculous. The idea of only crude oil going out, not being refined in some way, to me is ridiculous. Now, I know that it's tough, but I think we've got to spend a lot more energy on finding ways to improve our economy by sending our resources through at least one or two cycles to improve those resources and to make them more valuable. Now, to do that, we have to take a step back to what I was talking about a little while ago, and that is reducing the cost of energy. If we have high cost energy, companies cannot afford to operate in the state, so we have to send things out to have them refined in at least one step. So the reducing the cost of energy is key to the success of the state. Safety and security. We will continue to work on disaster response and prevention, and this is an area that we tie very well with federal agencies and with Russia and Canada. And we want to build those regional relationships because it's going to be very important for us to be able to respond and respond quickly, respond professionally, and respond in the best way possible. And in order to do that, we have to keep a focus and keep the pressure up on disaster response and prevention. We're going to continue working on building international relations. The state of Alaska is going to rejoin the Northern Forum. I made that announcement some time ago. One of the reasons we want to do that is because we can't exist without developing good regional partnerships. And we've had good regional partnerships in the past. We know we can have good regional partnerships as we go forward. And I think Alaska can take a strong leadership role in bringing more folks into this Arctic regional emphasis again, and then we can start to focus on things that are important to us. So we are going to continue to work on building those partnerships. There are a couple of things I think we can do together. One is to work on spill response. One is to develop search and rescue capabilities. One is to resolve our border conflicts. Something that's really important to me, being a Gwich'in from Fort Yukon, is working on visa-free travel for Indigenous folks that have family on the other side of the border. We just heard about the complications of Aleut folks getting back and forth across a border. We know it exists for Yupik, for Gwich'in, for Inupiaq, for Athabascans, for Tlingit Haida Simpson. All the folks that live along the borders have a tough time getting back and forth to see our cousins. You know, 60, well, we most of us that live on the other border, we could just walk across. Nobody's looking. But the but the fact of the matter is, we should be able to go back and forth more freely. And that's all I'll say about that. I got strong feelings. I don't want to get in trouble. But we're going to work on that. We must work on it. How much more time do I have?
2 minutes, so we can have questions.
Okay. I wanted to say that we're working on government collaboration. I won't focus on that. We're working on research. We have a tremendous university system. We need to partner with industry, partner with NGOs, partner with tribes and ANCs to continue building a very strong Arctic research emphasis in the state. And those will give us a better understanding of climate change. It'll help us to develop tools for adaptation. And I keep hitting on this because we don't focus on it enough. We talk about climate change. We talk about greenhouse gases. We talk about reducing, reusing. We talk about all these things. It seems to me we always forget about adaptation. And for those of you who live out in the land, who have spent time out in the country, who are born and raised out there, who hunt, fish, trap, and spend a lot of time out there, you know how important it is to be able to adapt, to change with the weather, to change with the patterns, to change with the ice flows, to change with whatever conditions you're facing. If the caribou herd doesn't come this week and you only have 1 week that you're allowed to hunt that's not allowing adequate adaptation. So we as a group have to focus on how we can ensure that we have adequate tools to adapt to the changes around us. And that goes from the individual hunter that's standing out on an ice floe all the way up to industry. How do we adapt to the changes around us to be safer, to be better, to be stronger at what we do? How can Alaska benefit from this? From increased collaboration, from partnering in research, from highlighting Alaska's issues, and there are a number of opportunities to collaborate. University professors and students can participate in the work groups of the Arctic Council. Athabaskan, Aleut, Inupiaq, Yupik, they can all participate in the working groups. They have a direct line of consultation with the White House and with the State Department, and they have a seat at the table as permanent participants to the Arctic Council. Government employees, NGOs, we all have opportunities to collaborate because there are plenty of ways to get together. And even if you can't necessarily get inside to an Arctic Council meeting, to a ministerial meeting, there will be plenty of side events. Look at this. I mean, I'd say as soon as we're done talking here, we could all collaborate. We can talk about Arctic issues, talk about what's important to us, make sure your issues are known by me, by Fran, by Karen, by anybody else that's involved. Let's work together. We can't do this alone.
Thank you all for inspirational and concrete and specific remarks. That is just great. And it really is an exciting time to be in Alaska. We're on the front lines of seeing change and being part of change and hopefully changing the way the U.S. thinks about the Arctic, changing the way the federal government works with to support Alaskan interests. And I do think that just as an observer of this whole process unfurling in the last few years, that the State Department and the federal government and the Obama administration have tried very hard to come to Alaska, to go to Barrow, to go to Nome and Kotzebue, and to listen and to try to be responsive to interests of communities and or local organizations. So I think that, to me, is a very encouraging sign. And it is also going to be, I think that we can expect to see a lot of big meetings and summits, and there's talk of having a presidential summit in the U.S. hosted by President Obama. Hopefully we can get that to happen in Alaska, so that could be exciting. But why don't we go to questions or comments from the audience? We have until 10:15, so a little more than 15 minutes.
Here, we've included one of the audience questions that helped to elaborate on the role the Arctic Council plays. Director of the Alaska Native Science Commission, Patricia Cochran, asked the speakers to address the significance of observer nations to the Arctic Council and also discuss the idea of naming an indigenous senior representative to the council. Fran Ulmer provided a response.
Yes, we have the 8 Arctic nations on the wall. Canada, Greenland, Finland, Iceland, Norway, Russia, Sweden, and the U.S.
Wow.
But, yeah, a very important point, which, Craig, you did an excellent job of reminding us why we are an Arctic nation. And also, I particularly loved your point that this isn't just about the next 2 years. I mean, the world has kind of awakened to the Arctic as an interesting place. because of climate change, because of globalization, because of the potential for oil and gas, because of a lot of media coverage. And that's not going to stop just because the U.S. chairmanship's over. That's going to continue. And so our engagement as Alaskans needs to continue. So that completely takes me to your question about why are all these other countries interested in becoming observers? And I'm just going to read off quickly the observer nations that have been approved by the Arctic Council: France, Germany, Netherlands, Poland, Spain, Great Britain, China, Italy, Japan, Korea, Singapore, and India. Any of those surprise you? Yeah. So, you know, for a variety of reasons, they are interested. They are interested because this place has potential oil and gas resources. They're interested because the shipping routes, the northern sea route across Russia, down through the Bering Strait, around to Asia, provides the potential for a quicker route to kind of link the east and west. Whether or not that really happens and at what time scale and all of those things, you know, lots of people talk about this. It will be shorter. The question is, will it be less expensive economically? Who knows? But that's why Singapore cares, because Singapore is a huge shipping. Not only are they currently huge, but they want to continue to be huge. So they want a seat at the table in any way they possibly can to get their scientists, their research people, their industry, their investors sort of staying tuned up to the Arctic and what goes on in the Arctic and how Russia might in some way change the rules of the game in terms of going across the northern sea route. I mean, all of these things are not exactly real yet. They're more about what people imagine might happen. Now, there is increased shipping, and there is increased oil and gas development, and there may be increased mining, and there certainly will be increased efforts, both from the standpoint of national security and international cooperation and things like science and research, all of which increases the interest level of the world, not just the Arctic nations. And that's why even more countries are knocking at the door to become observers in the Arctic Council. So who knows how large it will get. There is some tension around the table about not allowing that observer pool to get too big in the concern about, well, would that dilute the voice of the permanent participants? Would that dilute the voice of the Arctic Council? But again, I want to remind you, the Arctic Council doesn't make decisions about what's approved or not approved in the sense of they're not, it's not a governing entity, and it doesn't give away money. But it is the place where people come together, a big circle of cooperation, collaboration, communication, research, studies. So it's the place, it is kind of the place to be if you're interested in the Arctic in an international way. But where the rubber meets the road still remains, in to a large extent, at the both the national, the regional, and the local decision-making. Just real briefly to the National Park Service comment about the importance of keeping in mind how we're both global and local, you know, because of ocean currents, because of air currents, because of the fact that we are one planet, one ocean. What happens over here impacts what happens over there. So it's not like there's a big fence around the Arctic, either direction. So yes, currently there isn't much indication that plastics are a big deal in the Arctic the way they are in a lot of other places, the way they are in the Caribbean. But that could change because of ocean currents. So yes, we have to care about how people are behaving in the lower 48. And similarly, people in the lower 48 and in the southern hemisphere are concerned about what's happening to ice. So I would just point out one of the things that is at the back of the room is a small brochure that says Why the Arctic Matters. And it's something the Arctic Research Commission just did, not for Alaskans, because we know why the Arctic matters, but for other people down south who may, if you're sitting in Iowa, you may ask yourself, why should I be paying attention to what goes on in the Arctic? We're trying to do these brochures that just kind of tease out for people in Cincinnati or in Miami Beach or in Chicago or in San Diego to get them thinking, to get them to become curious about the Arctic so that they can be part of the conversation and part of the long-term stewardship of a very special region. So yes, we can all be ambassadors for the Arctic with our friends, relatives, colleagues in the, you know, not only the lower 48, but the world, to explain how important it is that this place is treated with respect.
Before you go, Fran, could you comment on the the point that the State Department has made? Admiral Pappas said he wants this chairmanship to be a chance for Alaska and the U.S. to educate the lower 48 about what the Arctic is.
Yes, both from the standpoint of trying to make the Arctic Council stronger and more meaningful, but also from the standpoint of getting people to care about the Arctic. Why is that important? Well, you know, as was mentioned, we only have sort of one, or you could say two, icebreakers, whereas other countries have dozens. Russia has dozens of icebreakers. You know, so, and I mean, Finland has more icebreakers than the United States has, you know, I mean, so how do we get people in Congress, which is where the money comes from to build more icebreakers, to think it's an important priority? That's part of why it's so important to use this Arctic Council chairmanship as kind of a wake-up call for people in the United States, people in the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives who have never been to Alaska, don't know anything about the Arctic, don't even want to talk about climate change, don't even want to admit that we are not capable right now to stand up the kind of support infrastructure that would be needed if there was a marine disaster. What if a cruise ship, one of these cruise ships that are, you know, going to transit the Northwest Passage, come down through the Bering Strait, what if one of those cruise ships runs aground? You know, these are big questions about the readiness of our communities, our state, and our nation to be prepared for things like an emergency, like an oil spill, et cetera. And we do, because this is a very big space, remote, not much infrastructure, challenging conditions, ice, cold, darkness, et cetera. We need infrastructure that is capable of responding. How do we get that? By helping people in the lower 48, and particularly elected officials, get to yes on investing in some of these things. One other thing, you raised the very important point about the indigenous people participation. Clearly, through permanent participants who have an important voice and through the responsibility that federal agencies have in terms of their outreach, there are many things that are happening. It's just because I didn't name off someone that doesn't mean a lot is happening in terms of engagement, but both Secretary Kerry and Special Representative Papp have indicated that they are going to make some new avenues available. I don't want to get ahead of, it's not something I can say, but there are efforts underway to make sure that there is an appropriate level of involvement of particularly Alaska Native people in the process as it moves forward. And there will be announcements about that soon. That's as far as I can go. It's something that I know has been talked about for a while. It has been heard, and it will happen.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with U.S. Arctic Research Commission Chair Fran Ulmer, Community Environment and Safety Manager for the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association, Karen Pletnikoff, and State of Alaska Arctic Advisor to the Governor, Craig Fleener. Their discussion on the Arctic Council was moderated by Director of U.S. Arctic Programs for the World Wildlife Fund, Margaret Williams, and was recorded at the Denina Center on February 11th as part of the week-long Alaska Forum on the Environment. Thanks for tuning in with us today on Addressing Alaskans. I'm your host and producer, Evan Erickson.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.